Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get three-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everyone, to SI Media with Jimmy Traina. Thank you so much for listening on this 4th of July week. I appreciate it. We have an excellent show. This week, we have Jason McCourty, who gives us all the information on him no longer being part of Good Morning Football. Good Morning Football moving from New York to L.A. for the upcoming season. Jason decided not to make the move, so he explains what went into the decision, what happened with Good Morning Football, why it's moving, and what he'll miss about it, and if he's going to continue with CBS calling games. Get into some Patriots stuff, too. Jason was one of the hosts at the Tom Brady retirement ceremony in New England. He talks about the roast, Bill Belichick, and his dating life, so we have a lot of fun with Jason. He also has a great rant about dance recitals that I recommend to everyone listen to. And then following Jason McCourty, Salicata joins me, as he does every week, for our Train of Thought segment. Talk about the DirecTV lawsuit, the Sunday Ticket lawsuit, I should say, with the NFL and what that means. Get into some 4th of July stuff as well. Got a book recommendation for you guys. So all that going on. Before we get to it, just quickly, last week we had a phenomenal episode with Pablo Torre about his very, very interesting podcast, Pablo Torre Finds Out. Pablo works for Meadowlark and Dan Le Batard and works for ESPN, so we discussed that with him last week. Derek Jeter and Richard Deitch were on the show 2 weeks ago for our 500th episode. Tom Brady and Jim Miller were on the podcast 3 weeks ago. So check out all those episodes if you missed them. Subscribe to SI Media with Jimmy Traina and leave a review on Apple. All right, let's get to it right now. Jason McCourty, formerly of Good Morning Football, on his exit from the show, along with Salicata and Train of Thoughts, all right here, right now, on SI Media with Jimmy Traina. All right, joining me now, it's a little bittersweet because I was a big fan of this guy's work on Good Morning Football, and he will not be part of it when the reboot happens, but he'll still be covering the NFL. We'll get into all of it now with Jason McCourty. Jason, how's it going?
It's going good. You know, I've had more time at home. Jimmy, as you know, as we were trying to schedule this, we were moving days around. I'm like, as long as in the morning, early afternoon, I'm free. I got nothing going on. My schedule's clear, so it's good to be joining you. Good to see you.
What was it like having all this time off?
I would say it was a lot of fun in the beginning. And then after a while, I think my kids and my wife were looking at me like, all right, there's no GMFB, but you can find something else to do. Like, we're tired of you complaining that there's too many dishes in the sink or telling the kids to put the pajamas in the dirty clothes hamper. So that's what day-to-day life has been like, but it has been cool. Like, school year is over now, but dropping the kids off at school every morning. My son now with baseball, we're diving on into that. We're watching SportsCenter in the morning as he was getting ready for school, watching all of that stuff. So it has been nice. You know, I started GMFB. I retired from the league, and then the next week, I accepted the job, and 2 weeks later, we were on air at the end of July, and it's been that grind ever since. So this is the first time kind of post-football that I've actually just been chilling, being around the family. The cool thing has been where now when vacations come up, where you were trying to work out the days and stuff, it was just like, well, no, actually, like, we can stay till Monday. We got nothing else going on, but it's good to look forward. I know when the season starts, I'll get a little bit more busy.
How much extra sleep you getting now without GMFB? Are you able to sleep past like 4 a.m. or is the body so used to that wake up call that it's hard to get that many extra hours in the morning?
No, I'm out. There's been mornings where during the week where there's no alarm. Even waking up like with the kids at 7 o'clock felt like I had a full 12 hours worth of sleep, no matter what time I went to bed, because it was just newfound territory of getting used to waking up every single morning. But I tell you, like, you miss that platform where it's just that every single day talking sports, being around Kyle, Peter, and Jamie and everybody behind the scenes. You miss that camaraderie of hanging out with everybody. So there's that give and take on both sides.
Yeah. Let me start backwards. Before we go to Good Morning Football and what's going on there, let me go to I just want to be sure. Are you going to be back calling games for CBS this upcoming season? Has that been determined?
it hasn't been determined, but a lot of conversations around that. That's the, from my end, that's the hope to be able to take on more of CBS and doing a little bit of that. So still in conversations and all of that, you know how it all gets worked out, but hopefully sometime in the near future, like we can announce that possibly I'm doing more games or whatever that may look like.
Yeah, because when the news broke about the NFL moving Good Morning Football from New York to LA, my, you know, right away I'm thinking of Peter and Kyle because I know those guys. They've been on this podcast a million times. And I'm like, well, Jason, I'm like, I'm assuming he's an automatic no because he has CBS and, you know, not going to get into your personal finances, but you're an NFL player. So you aren't making like 50 grand a year for your career. So I'm like, he doesn't need to up. And I know you're a Jersey guy. You went to Rutgers. Yeah. So I'm like, he's not going to move across the country. If you didn't have the CBS thing, I would assume maybe it would have been a little different. But take me through, like, was CBS a big factor in you not moving west? Was it never even an option for you to move west? Take me through the whole thing.
I would say when the news first hit, I was like, oh, hell no. I said to my wife, like, there's no way I'm going all the way to California. And I think more than that, it was just like a complete shock, like having no idea, not seeing it coming. Like we literally, I was like penciling in our dark weeks, like what weeks to ask vacation for. I had a friend's wedding coming up. So like the whole plan was like, you were getting ready for the summer on GMFB. So when that news hit like the beginning of March, at the end of March, it's going to be our last show in New York. Originally, you know, like anybody, you're like, screw them, I'm not going to LA. And I think as time passed, the realization is like, I really love the show. I love being around the people that are involved in the show. So you, me and my wife sat down and we're like, all right, if we do say, all right, we're going to move to LA, what does that look like? And for me, CBS didn't factor in at that time because the biggest thing was family. So my first 8 years of my career, I was in Tennessee from 2017 to when I accepted that job in 2022. My family had lived in Tennessee. We lived in Ohio when we were playing in Cleveland, 3 years in Massachusetts. Then we moved to South Florida. Then we moved back to New Jersey. So it was like from my oldest kid, she did second, third, and fourth grade all in a different state. So and I'm not complaining. Everybody's people in Army. Everybody has their own situations. But for me at that time, it was just like I couldn't come up with a reason beyond like selfish ambition within the industry to continue my career. I couldn't come up with one good reason why it made sense to move my wife and three kids out of New Jersey. Because to your point, financially, we were fine to be able to stay in New Jersey. Both me and my wife's parents live 30 minutes away from us. So it was just like beyond just, all right, Good Morning Football is still going to be there. And then I think the tougher thing my wife challenged me on was, all right, we get to LA, the show's now coming on at 5 a.m. So now you're waking up, instead of waking up at 5 a.m., now you could be waking up at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And she knows how I am. The first few months of GMFB here, like I was a zombie. Like, no, like nobody wanted to be around me in the house because everything irritated the hell out of me because it took time to adjust. So then just quality of life and what it would feel like as a husband and as a father, not just a co-host on a show, of like how I would be able to kind of keep all those plates spinning at the same time was also going to be a challenge. So ultimately, like we had those convos and it was just like, hey, you know what? It would be best for us to stay put. And at that time, it was just like, all right, like my contract situation was specific to me where I had a 4-year deal, but there was a, after the second year, there was an option that had to be picked up. So for them, it was just like, all right, like we want you to come to LA. We want you to be a part of the show. We love you. But then it was like, when I'm not moving, it made no sense for them to pick up my option and continue to pay me for another 2 years with not knowing what my activity was going to be on the show, commuting in and out. So that was kind of the end of it. And then the hope was, all right, maybe there's something you could work out and figure out. And those things, I think, for them are a little bit further down the line as they determine exactly what GMFB is going to look like for the future with Kyle and Peter and Jamie and everybody.
So it's interesting to me. So you actually did discuss the possibility of moving to LA. I was wondering about that. So the news that the show would move from New York City, Lower Manhattan to LA, that just came as a complete shock to all of you, right?
Yeah, and I think even above us, it was a shock to them. They're trying to figure out like how to keep the show going, like what financially, all of those different things and variables that factor in that are above my head that I have no idea what's being discussed at those higher levels. I think for them, they looked at it and was just like, hey, like LA is a way to keep our show going, to keep it Good Morning Football. So the hope, I think, was for all four of us to go and pick the pieces up and put it all together and figure it out. But yeah, it was a shock to all of us. And then in this industry, I'm quickly finding out, no different than football, like you don't know what's around door number two. I was cut while I was playing. I was traded while I was playing. So all of those different things happen. You adjust and you roll with it. And the unique thing, I was talking to one of our producers, Bill Henschel, about it, and he's been in this industry forever. And the one thing he said to me, you strike gold if you actually are able to create a show and work for a show that works. And it was just like, for me, I don't have that experience because I got in on a good show and just picked up where Nate left off and tried to keep it going of something that was already an Emmy award-winning show. So he was just saying to me, it's just like, listen, like, you can go your whole career in this industry and never be a part of a show that actually becomes a brand that people recognize. So for a lot of people involved, you're like, well, if I can move with this show, I'm moving, because there's no guarantee that I'm going to leave this show and get on a better job or a better show. So that was, I think, for even me, where it factored in of like, let's actually give this some thought and see what it may look like, because there's no guarantee you're going to be good if you do 18 games. There's no guarantee there's another studio show that's in need of another host right away. So Right. Those all factor in it when you come to making the decision.
Yeah, no, I think all four of you have unique situations. I mean, obviously, Peter and Kyle have been there since the show started. They have a chemistry just because they've been there so long together. And Nate was great on the show. And we've seen what Nate has done with his career since he left the show. So for them to strike gold twice with the quote unquote ex-player seat of that show, you know, Nate, that had to be extremely difficult for you to go in there following him, considering how good he was and then what he ended up doing. And then the show has a hit on their hands with you. And then after 2 years, like, now you got to be out. I mean, I'm sure behind the scenes, they must be bummed about that too, because now they got to replace you after getting lucky when you got to replace Nate and you worked out so well.
Yeah. And I think even beyond the performance on screen is all the stuff behind the scenes. And, you know, any job you work out, for me, a lot of it was being in a locker room. When the chemistry and the relationships work within a show, like, that's huge too. When you can walk into that studio Monday through Friday and like everybody feels good about being there, and Peter can look at me and say, you know what, like, J-Mac's a good teammate, and I can feel the same way about him, and we continue to further our relationship, I think that's the big thing. So when you're making those selections, all right, there's one piece of it where it's just like, all right, this guy, we think he can be really good on camera. But then another piece of it is just like, well, how does he fit into the equation with everybody, not only on the screen, but the people holding the cameras up, the producers behind the scene? Is he an asshole? Like, that's a major thing, too. Is he somebody that people want to work with? So I do think it is hard to continue to strike gold. But I think the one realization I've had is, man, everybody's replaceable. Like, we all like to think of ourselves in this very unique way and how special we are and how talented we are. But there's somebody out there that's better. In the event, Nate was really good and I came in and I tried my hardest just to fill Nate's shoes, because like you said, Nate is still killing it, and who knows where he's going to end up when it's all said and done. And our show was able to keep going, and Peter and Kyle have been the mainstays, and I'm so thankful to those two guys. I told them that, because I learned so much just about TV from not asking them a ton of questions, but just watching those guys work and how much they care about GMFB2 when Nate leaves and Kay leaves, to be able to get two new replacements and welcome me and Jamie in, but also show us the ropes and challenge us to continue to keep the standard at a certain level. So I do think it's definitely a challenge to replace and continue to move on, but I'm not naive to think like they can't find somebody better than me and keep that thing going.
Give me one like very specific thing you will miss the most about doing Good Morning Football.
You know, I'll say I would get into the studio around 6 a.m. and have an hour of prep time. And somewhere in between there, we have hair and makeup. Fortunate for me, the hair part I was able to skip. Mm-hmm. But walking in the makeup room where Jamie kind of was always every morning, but then we had Bradford and Maddie and all Ashley, the different hair and makeup people, would all kind of be our own little meeting within the room. And I'd walk in there and we spend probably 15, 20 minutes of just conversation about whatever was going on. And I think that's the stuff behind the scenes that you miss so much. Even Kyle, when it came time to do angry runs, where in the break, he'd be pacing back and forth and he'd be like reciting what he was about to say, but it always sound like gibberish to us. And depending upon like what mood he was in, you would see like where this thing was going. He could be completely zoned out. And then next thing you know, he's going. And then we look at his card after and you think like he has all this information. And it was highlights, scribbles, and all types of stuff. So all of that's the things that the creativity that would happen behind the scenes, you miss that of not knowing what the hell was going to happen. There was a when Russ signs with the Steelers, we're getting ready to go on. And I guess Kyle had discussed it with our stage manager, what he was going to do. But he does a spit take during the middle of the segment. And we're all sitting there. For one, you're trying to cover yourself up that he doesn't spit on you. Which is like, what the hell was that? But he said, and then right after he goes, Danny, I told you I was going to do it. Sorry about that. So like those little things that happen that sometimes if you're watching, you're like, oh, they planned that. And the rest of us have no idea what's going on. I'll miss it. I'll miss the 5:30 a.m. call with all the arguing as well. So I know I went down a litany of all the different things. So I really enjoyed the show.
Kyle could have been the original Haktua. who would have guessed if he would have
Who would have guessed? Now I would have had a totally different meaning than a Russell Wilson spit take. So,
right. Well, that's the thing. If he does that now, then they'll accuse him of trying to, you know, jump on that bandwagon.
I wouldn't be surprised. He'll have something.
Yeah. Tell me, Kyle definitely would have worked in a Haktua reference on the show if you guys were on the air right now too. That's Kyle knew how to work those things in. Tell me about what was your feel. So after doing a year with CBS where you called games, give me your take on studio GMFB versus doing games. Is the adrenaline different? Obviously the prep is probably a little different, but give me the compare and contrast of the GMFB versus doing a game for CBS.
Yeah, so I said to somebody, doing the games, you play the game, once you retire, the closest thing I think you can get to being in that game and playing it is being on the sideline and coaching and having your hand in that. Coaching was never going to be for me, the time commitment, all those things. I think the next best thing is being able to be there in that booth and having an impact on the game as far as from the people sitting at home viewing the game. And when you talk about the adrenaline within that, the thought of, between every single play, I have to think of as that play is happening, what I'm going to say, determining whatever happens on the field, but be so concise that I have to shut up before my play-by-play guy gets to go. And then for me, I did three-man booths last year, some with Ross Tucker, some I did a game with Dan Orlovsky. Like, and that's even more tricky because now I saw something, I really want to say it, but Ross is in the booth going like this, me, because he's fired up and he wants to say something. So that whole dynamic, I think you become a competitive junkie from playing with the thrill of succeeding, but also the fear of failing. And I think being in the booth, it brings that upon a lot of playing and play out, not fumbling over your words, not saying something stupid where somebody at home was just like, what the hell is he talking about? They have three timeouts and he's saying that they got to get out of bounds, whatever the case it may be of trying to be on point, where the studio is more laid back, where we know the itinerary and everything we're going to hit on going into it. But what I loved about the studio was your ability to be creative. I was fortunate enough to be on Good Morning Football, where we had a lot of say as the talent that sit at the desk of what we wanted to do segment wise and where we were going to take it. And I look at the second year of GMFB of what it evolved to, of me hosting a segment that had to do with wardrobe or hosting a segment where we're talking about defense and being able to take that segment wherever in the hell we want to take it. You don't get that creativity within a game because you can't, it's not about you. So you can't take away from the experience of it. But for me, there's nothing like walking in a stadium and or even the night before, sitting down, talking to players, talking to the coaches, of actually being a part of it. And last year, I loved doing both because I was sitting in the studio and I would say all of these things. But then on the weekend, I'd go to whatever city and you got to be accountable for whatever you're saying Monday through Friday, because you're sitting there saying something about a team, a player, a coach. And if it's way off the wall, now I got to sit in front of this person who might have just watched whatever I said Wednesday morning and been pissed about it and be held accountable for it. So that part of it, I really love because you got a chance to do both.
Yeah, I'm not comparing our situations in any way, shape or form, but I actually relate to that because I write a column every day and I will sometimes write something critical of someone doing a game, and then like I gotta be like, you want to come on my podcast? And doesn't always, you know, because you mentioned the timeout thing. That's usually my pet peeve, and what I'll, if I'm ever going to be critical and write something negative about announcers, I hate when they mess up like strategy and timeouts at the end of the game. So that's like a little thing of mine. And then, you know, I'm like, oh, that guy would be good on the podcast. Oh, wait, I ripped him 2 weeks ago. I probably shouldn't reach out. Just to be clear about it before we move on, you don't have any deal yet with CBS. You're working on it, but you definitely want to call games and be an analyst in the booth this upcoming season.
Yeah, definitely. I want to continue to be involved in it in whichever way possible. And games is something I love doing. So, yeah.
And you did radio too, right? Didn't you do games on radio? Like what, Thursday nights? I think you did.
Yeah. So just a combination. Howard Dinneroff's not with Western One. Mike Eby's the guy there now. But yeah, so between me and my brother called two games together, both with Iron Eagle. So that was kind of a mixed posh of like local games I could get to and all of that. The last 2 years, it was 7 in year one. And I think it was probably 7 last year games that I did total. It was the playoff game and all of that. So whatever way last year, I did 13 games. So some on TV, some on radio.
Do you have a preference? Like, do you like radio as much as TV, or you like TV better than radio in terms of doing a game?
So I like both, and I'll explain that. Radio, I had a Thursday night game in Philly, the Eagles versus the Vikings. I took a car down Thursday afternoon to get to the game, called the game, got in the car, and went back home. Do a game for CBS, you take a flight out on Thursday night, you wake up Friday, you go meet with the team, you go watch practice, you go out Friday night, you wake up Saturday, you go to walkthrough, you do meetings on Saturday night, you do a production meeting, you call it. So it's just like the radio is beautiful because it's like this is football in its purest form. Prepare how you prepare. You know, we'll see you at the game and let's get it done. And the TV part of it, although it's a lot more involved, but it's really cool to be able to have all the gadgets at your disposal to be able to say, hey, I want to show a package here of something that happened the week before because I think this is going to happen in the game. And you have the replays. You have different things that you can take your time more or less to fully explain. And I don't have to worry about telling the listener of like it was a snag on the left side of the field where he was able to bring it in with one hand and how hard of a catch. The people at home are watching it on TV. So now you can just talk about how difficult that play is or what makes it happen. So I really like both the radio games. Some think are harder. I just think it's different. The description and how you go about it is completely different versus the TV. But I enjoy both the radio, being able to get in and get out, man. There's something beautiful about that.
Yeah, yeah. And Ian's great, who you did the games with. So I would imagine that makes it a lot of fun, too.
And the crazy thing, my first year doing it, I do the 7 games. And my first game ever was with Iron Eagle. And I thought Howard Dinneroff was out of his mind. I get to Cleveland. I'm like, yo, I know Iron. Like, I've, as soon as you hear his voice, I'm like, there's no way in hell, like, you guys are letting me call a game with Iron Eagle. And throughout that first season of, like, whatever tips I had, him actually talking to CBS and saying how good I was and how much fun it was to work with me between Iron Eagle and Tom McCarthy. Man, both of those guys, as far as play-by-play guys, have been tremendous for me. Hell, Tom would text me after he heard me do a game and send me like a list of things that he heard from me that I can correct. So those two guys have been awesome for me of just being guys that I'm like mentors in a sense that I can hit up and ask questions to and just be a sounding board.
Yeah, that's great that you had that experience. Tell me, you mentioned your segment on GMFB. You said you did a fashion segment. It's called The Fit List. I loved it. I really, like, I thought it was a must watch every week. I would assume it bums you out that, you know, no fit. Was that like one of the hardest parts about not going back to GMFB? Because I think each week that segment got better.
So that segment, we had a producer, David Ziplow, and then Ryan Rivera, our wardrobe guy. Us three were on a group chat every single week of outfits coming out, sending them to us. All right, what can we get to the store and pick up? And as when the season ended, we were already in full discussions of, all right, next year we may move to Thursday to give it, like, it was like a full blown thing of, yeah. Progressive became a sponsor on it. So it like took off from just an idea in the beginning of what we could do to what it became. So that part of it is brutal because those were segments that weren't on the show when I first started. Ooh Wee, the Fit List. And the Fit List came in year two after having a better idea of what the expectations were and all of that. So to like Peter and Kyle can probably relate the most on this. They were there from the very beginning of Good Morning Football. So what has grown into the trials and tribulations, the ups and downs with the Fit List, I felt the same. It felt like it was your baby. Like you started this thing, you grew it, you made it better. And now you're looking at what it could become in the future. And then just like that, it's like, damn, well, there that goes. So that those are the things of why you try to say, all right, can we make this thing work? But it's one of those things. It's just like it is what it is, you know?
Will you be watching GMFB when it comes back, or will it be too tough to watch?
No, I think I'll be an everyday watcher. I just think for me, like if I'm going to be calling games, you obviously study your game throughout the course of the week, but like you want to know what's going on in the NFL. And I think listening to those guys, and Jamie and Peter and Kyle, who I've been now with for two seasons, I can listen and understand what they're talking about. So I think a combination, you know, I'm not going to lie, I'll be watching Get Up. I'll be watching First Take. Now my mornings being free, I'll be watching everything and listening for everything. So I think I'll definitely watch it. I say that now. I may turn it on, be like, the hell with them. They left me high and dry and turn it off. But I think I'll be tuning in.
Or if your replacement says something stupid, you could cackle. see they. But you might be on them. You know, you can end up on a morning show during the season. You know, with the way media is now, everyone has like eight jobs, it seems like. So who knows where you'll end up.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about some non-Good Morning Football stuff, because I got to just touch on a couple of things while I have you, because you played for the Patriots, won a Super Bowl, had that great play against the Rams. Breaking up a touchdown in the first quarter. And it seems like the Patriots are just always in the news about stuff. So let me start. And you were like one of the hosts of the Brady ceremony, right? The jersey retirement. Well, let's start with this. I'll just start. What did you make of the roast?
Yo, the roast was insane. And obviously, you know what a roast is, but watching it and knowing the people, I will say, like,
well, that's why your perspective is important on this.
I thoroughly enjoyed and was surprised by the players getting up there. So from Bledsoe, like Bledsoe's just had a moment. Like Bledsoe needs to be on TV somewhere, podcast something, because he was awesome at the Hall of Fame induction as well with Brady, called him the worst backup quarterback in NFL history. So he's just been hitting. But I just couldn't imagine sitting there and just listening to joke after joke with the same topic and everything, you know?
It was just Were you surprised Tom did it?
Yes, I've heard numbers being floated out, though, of what he got paid to do it. So then I was just like, no, sign me up. And people are like, well, you guys, a lot of money. There's certain numbers that make a difference that possibly are worth jokes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's getting $375 million from Fox. Does he need like that? But did anyone's performance at the row surprise you, either good or bad?
I mean, I wasn't familiar with Nikki Glaser. And I mean, obviously, everybody said that she got on and was phenomenal. Jules surprised me. I figured Jules would be good, but Jules came out with a Kraft joke to start. He had a Hernandez joke. I didn't expect that right away. Like I said, Bledsoe definitely surprised me. I thoroughly enjoyed the roast and what everybody. Sammy J was really good too. So there was a lot of people that you typically don't see comedians, and then you see them all up there. Because the difficult thing to me was the jokes were kind of all the same. Like there was a lot of jokes that had to do with whether it was Deflategate or whether it was his ex-wife, all of the different things. So being able to come up with a different way of saying it and make it funny was impressive.
You know, I feel like too, because the roasters were so brutal, I feel like what got lost was I thought Tom was really good at the end when it was his turn. Was he a ball buster in the locker room? Like, because he's going into TV. It's going to be, you know, I think a big thing for Tom doing TV. It's interesting because he was on this podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I asked him his biggest concern with getting into broadcasting. He said he's worried he might be too critical of the players. I wonder, what I hope for Tom is I hope he lets his personality shine through, because like you said, with TV, you got to be in and out. You don't have a lot of time, although he's in a two-man booth, so it's a little better for him. I'm sure Kevin Burkhardt will defer to him a lot. But comment on that and tell me what you think Tom going into the booth will be like.
Yeah, like when you say, is he a ball buster? Like I tell people all the time, like Tom was another guy in the locker room. So in the sense of Tom could walk in with those big white Under Armour shoes that he would walk in with some old man jeans on, and Jules would be the first one, Tom, what the f- are you wearing? So like he, like that was the locker room. He wasn't treated any different, and he would go right back at him. Right. Him and Hoyer were always competing, whether they were playing cornhole and they're trash talking each other. Like that was Tom. So when he says like he has a fear of being too critical, I think when he gets comfortable in the booth, like he's not going to have a problem with his knowledge of the game calling something out, whether it's a quarterback, receiver, a DB, whatever it is, of like, no, that was wrong. I don't think he's going to have an issue of like, wow, Tom's just too nice in the booth. I think his fear is that he's such a perfectionist and did it at such a high level that that's going to be the expectation of the other greats that are playing. I think his fear is like, I don't want to get up there and just humble somebody for three straight hours. So it's just like that balance of making sure like I'm pointing out the good things, holding them accountable, seeing what I'm seeing and saying it, but also doing it in a way that's enjoyable for everybody. And it's not me just like on a high horse talking down to the players that are now playing in the league, you know?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does in the booth. I think he's going to be good.
Yeah.
Is there like a group chat with all the ex-Patriot players? Or there's no big...
It's all like different sections of them. Like different guys have different group chats. But yeah, I still talk to a lot of guys.
So in the group chat, has the topic the last couple of weeks been Bill Belichick's dating life?
100%. That's been in the group chat. It's more like you'll see a post on like X or Instagram and somebody's talking about it, especially when it first hit and you hit the group chat. You're like, did you see this? And it's just like, dang, like news got out. Because I think a lot of guys kind of knew, different people that have been in that area knew about him dating him and his new girlfriend for a little while now. So now that it's out, it's just like there's a lot of those memes and stuff being sent.
I hope he's only been dating her for a little while and not a long while, because that could end up being a problem. But I was curious. I don't want you to go into any area. But I was just curious when the players, if any Patriot player who played for Bill, when they saw that news, complete shock or not surprised. That's what I'd be curious to know.
Man, I would say not surprised in a sense of like my dog's single. You're out there. You're looking to mingle. You find somebody you like. Go ahead and try to chase love and figure it all out. You know, Bill's not married, so there's no expectation for him to have to be with a certain person. So it's just like you see it and you're like, you know what, man, do your thing, Bill. You're not coaching this year. You got a lot of free time. Go travel, hang out, enjoy the world.
Now, can you give that response in front of your wife? Or do you want? I think the men and women might have different takes on that.
She may listen, give a nice little giggle, and like slide the knife a little closer to her and just be like, don't you get any ideas though. You better be happy with what you got at home. So the conversation may go a little bit like that.
That's so funny. That is funny. I mean, it is, it's just like, you know, you hit on it because I think I'm in this, like you scroll through Twitter during the day and then you'll see like, you know, Bill Belichick, 72, girlfriend 24, spotted. Hold, I'm like, you have to read it like three times, it seems like, to really like have it sink in. All right, before I let you go, I want to bring up something because this is what is so great about GMFB. And you guys can go into areas other than football. And I've said to Kyle too, like what would, you know, I think Kyle is so freaking talented. And what always would impress me about Kyle, though, I was always tell him, is the shows they would do this time of year when there's no football, there's nothing going on, and how they come up with content. And you had one of the great, great takes on a subject you're really not supposed to talk about negatively. So the fact that you did it made you a hero of mine. And it's how horrible. And I'm going to say it's horrible. I don't care. You want to think I'm a bad person? You can think I'm a bad person. But how horrible recitals are for kids. because it's not just like, okay, you go see your kid dance and you're proud and you take the videos and the pictures and it's all good. No, it's like a 3 to 4 hour affair. I'll let you handle it. But the guts you showed for giving that take publicly, and you recently, you must have had a recital recently because you brought it up again on Instagram. And we need more honesty like that from our analysts.
So the awesome thing about this is I didn't have a recital recently. I got invited to a recital recently, and that's what sparked the thought in my mind. For some crazy reason, my twin brother, his wife, sends us a text in a group chat telling us when my niece's dance recital is and that they have a ticket for us that they paid for. And I said to my sister-in-law, are you out of your mind? My two daughters have decided that they don't want to do dance anymore. They're in gymnastics, they're in volleyball, cheerleading. They don't want to do the dance anymore. You are out of your mind if you think I'm going to sign up to go to a dance recital to my niece. Like, I love her, but I absolutely not. There's no way I'm stepping foot in a high school gymnasium again where there's probably no air conditioner. It's hot and we're sitting there for hours. My mom went and I was like, bless your soul for going through it, because she had all boys. So we never had to put her through anything of that nature. But I mean, we did one in South Florida and then we did one in Jersey when we first got here. And both my daughters were involved in it. And we were there while they were on stage for a total of probably 8 minutes. And we were there for 2.5 hours. And then you get stuck in the middle of the row. And then I have a son he's 8 now, but was 7 and 6 during that time span. So he has to go to the bathroom or he wants a snack. So he's not going to sit still and be entertained. You're just praying that they choose songs that are popular enough that he wants to hear them. So in South Florida, they have Bruno Mars going. So for the first probably 40 minutes, my guy was in there. He was jamming, singing the words. I was like, this ain't bad. You fast forward, we're in an all Taylor Swift type of era right now. He's sitting there like, for one, I got to listen to this in the car way here. Now I got to listen to 3 hours of it. So I'm so happy that the girls are now moving away from dance. Because not only was the recitals brutal, where I practiced 2 or 3 times during the course of a week, well, I'm sitting there on my iPad getting ready for a segment the next day. So, man, and the funny thing about it is when I did that, I had dads that, because it ended up getting played on the local radio, dads that would come to school and be like, yo, I heard you on the dance recitals, man. My wife wasn't too happy, but man, you were spot on that. So my only hope was that my kids aren't old enough, like they don't do social media. So I'm like, I'm good. Like they have a while before they hear what dad had to say about them.
But it's not about the kids. It's about the event. It's the event that's the problem. And you are a hero for unleashing that take.
The last one I went to, the instructor was a part of the performance too. Like she was dancing throughout. And I'm sitting there, I'm looking at my wife like, so now I'm paying to have the instructor who danced 20 years ago. Now, like, she wants to go on stage. Like, I coach my son's football team. Like, I shouldn't be able to check into the game and line back up at free safety to relive, to try to go make a play and score a touchdown. I'm like, what the hell are we doing here? I'm watching her now. Put the kids on stage.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I think that might be the biggest bullshit of it all, is that you pay thousands of dollars for the dance and then they make you pay for a ticket to the recital.
Yes. For grandma, for uncle, yeah, and auntie and them and everybody. Yeah. And we aren't going to Juilliard. So it's like, I don't know what the end payoff and all of this is. So I'm just, you know what? I'm going to ease up on it because I'm like, I'm not living that life anymore. So I'm going to just go ahead and say a prayer for all the dads out there that just went through it throughout the spring season.
I love that. There must have been so many dads just trying to quietly like give you the thumbs up. Like, way to go, man. You said
we're
it.
But not letting it. The wife see him.
Yeah. All right. Well, like I said, I'm going to miss you on GMFB. I appreciate you doing this, giving us sort of the behind the scenes story. And hopefully you get that deal done with CBS and we hear you on some games and we'll have you on during the season for sure. So I appreciate you coming on and good luck with everything in the future, Jason. Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Sounds good. I'll be coming to a TV, I think, during the week throughout the season. We'll see what happens, but I think you'll see a little bit more of me.
Awesome. All right. Take care, man.
Yes, sir. You too.
All right, joining me now, as he does every week, for our Train of Thoughts segment from WFAN Radio in New York, SNY TV in New York, my buddy Sal Licata. Sal, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. Excited for the holiday week. Should be fun here.
What are we wearing? I can't see. What are we wearing?
This is WFAN.
Okay, okay. I thought it looked like a little, I didn't know if it was Knicks, Rangers. I'm colorblind. I can't tell red and orange.
It's blue and orange for like the Mets. You like this. So today is, you know, July 1st, 1987, the fan started.
Right.
This warm-up jacket, Bob Huesler gave it to me years ago. It was one of the warm-up jackets that they used to wear for the WFAN basketball team.
Got it. Okay.
So there you go.
Yes, July 1st, the fan. First voice on the fan, Susan Waldman. That's a famous little known fact. I always think of you on July 1st because I know that you despise and hate the Bobby Bonilla nonsense. And
oh,
it is,
God.
It's unbelievable. Like, I log on to Twitter in the morning and I go through my page and everything is Bobby Bonilla tweets. Like, do we really need to do, I'm with you now. Like, do we really need to do this every year? Like, okay. Right.
It bothered me 10 years ago. So imagine now where it's like, all right, I think we've all had enough of it. Like,
I would assume you're numb to it by now.
Who still thinks it's funny? Like the one I've only now years ago, I am kind of numb to it. And years ago, it used to be every tweet in my feed. Boom, boom, boom. Happy Benny Day. I'm like, oh, my God, these people don't even realize how unfunny they are. This is so old and played. It's so stupid. And then today I saw one tweet, Darren Revelle with his Bobby Benny Day hat on. And I'm like, this is exactly why it's corny. This is the poster child for Bobby Benny Day. Thank you, Darren.
Darren Revelle is not a guy you should follow. I can't see you enjoying Darren Revelle's tweets. Although you're into the baseball cards.
Yeah, I like the collectible aspect of it. Now, he's a little much at times, but he's great. He's the best at it with the collectibles and the ratings and all that stuff. So I do find him interesting. I put up with the corny nonsense to get some of the good stuff. But that's like, come on, Darren.
A compliment for Revelle. I'm impressed by your maturity there. I didn't even see people like trying to make jokes about it. It was just like Happy Bobby Bonilla Day. And it's like, oh my God. Okay.
In comparison to some of the other deferred contracts out there, like the Bonilla one's a bargain. If you actually look up Chris Davis and how bad
right,
it is.
I actually put that in my column today, but the problem with the Bonilla one is it's like, it's every year. It never ends. That's the problem.
Right. That is true. Yes.
Are you ready to get $3,000 or $4,000 from the NFL?
Yes. So what is up with it? Can you explain this to me? All I want to know is how it impacts me. It doesn't, right?
Right. No, it does. It absolutely impacts you.
Wait, how?
You had Sunday ticket.
Yes.
If you had Sunday ticket between a certain period of years, you're supposedly going to get some settlement money. And Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, they've done a great job covering this. Although the one issue is it's still not really all settled. Like, there's going to be appeals, and the amount that is going to be paid out has not been fully established.
What was it, like $4 billion or something?
Yes.
Okay.
And they're
what is the issue? I still don't get what the issue is.
A bunch of people sued the NFL. A group of people filed an antitrust lawsuit against the NFL. Saying that I think like it was a monopoly, and because it wasn't, because the only place you could get it was DirecTV, no other place, and because the price was so jacked up because of the monopoly. So
right. But I thought
so, go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
No, you go.
I thought that it was only pertaining to like establishments that paid for it. I didn't know it was individuals like you or I. I thought it was only bars or restaurants or whatever.
I'll read you. The class action lawsuit is on behalf of more than 2.4 million residential subscribers and more than 48,000 restaurants, bars, and other commercial establishments that purchased Sunday ticket.
Okay, so that would include everybody like you or I who have purchased the thing. I think for me, I had it since 1999.
Yeah. And from what I read, there is a chance that the NFL is going to have to cut a check between $3,000 and $4,000 to every single one of us who is a subscriber.
God, What I love that right now. I could really use that. Actually, you know what that'd be great for? To start up my September betting pool for the season.
I thought you'd done betting.
I was. Oh, but football shit. Season's around the corner, and if I could get a free $4,000, tell my wife it was three, put $1,000 in a little kitty, you know, the NFL kitty pool there.
Oh my God. So the gambling hiatus is going to be over soon.
Well, I think so. I think football season, we got to play it by ear. I have not made a bet since Kansas City, Miami on that Saturday night in the postseason. That was the last time I actually placed a wager. So
it says here the lawsuit was originally filed in 2015 on behalf of a San Francisco sports bar, alleging that DirecTV, CBS, ESPN, and Fox violated antitrust law by suppressing competition in exclusive agreements with the NFL that restricted fans' ability to view out-of-market games. So the NFL plans to appeal, of course. And there we go.
Well, whatever. As long as I'm able to watch DirecTV, I'm not DirecTV. As long as I'm able to watch Sunday.
No, I don't want to. I want $3,000 from the NFL.
I mean, that'd be great. What would you do with it?
Use it to buy Sunday ticket. I mean, I sent you this text.
I'm doing tapings on my phone. I can't see.
No. I'm saying I sent you a text over the weekend. You didn't return it, but that's okay.
Are you sure I even got it?
It's here. It says delivered.
What did they say? I don't know if I got it.
I sent you the screen grab of the email I got from YouTube, and then I sent you a message that I can't read on the air because I'll get canceled. But it says that my charge for something. Now, I'm not a YouTube TV subscriber. I am a Verizon Fios cable subscriber. So the cost of Sunday ticket for the 2024 season for James Traina, $449.
Ooh.
So yeah.
Hey, we've been getting away with it for years. When did you send that to me? Saturday morning?
So basically, $449, sue their asses off.
I think mine's 300 or something like that.
Saturday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. I was many, many surf sides in the pool. That might have been when I saw him just like and deleted it.
Deleted it? I don't mind no response, but why are you deleting it?
I honestly don't remember it, and I have a thing where I delete all my texts.
Even the ones you don't respond to?
No, well, maybe I thought I responded. Maybe
you were drunk and deleted it before you responded. Okay, I got it.
Or by accident. It might even still be on, actually. I got to check, but that is bizarre because normally, I'd always respond.
I don't mind no response because there are texts I don't respond to, but to say to my face, deleted without a response.
No, it must have just been in bad habit. I don't know. I can't, honestly, that's a weird one.
That I can't tolerate.
I apologize.
So, yeah, so the NFL is ordered to pay $4.7 billion to its customers.
Now I'm worried about, did I delete anybody else? Like, what if Taylor Rooks texted me on Saturday?
You don't want to say that on this podcast.
I said it because you were talking about how you don't respond sometimes. And I remember like texting her and then she didn't respond. So that made me think of it. But like, what if somebody did text me on Saturday? Like with you, it's whatever. We'll pick it up. But what if it was somebody that I haven't talked to in a while then?
Right. All right. Fair enough. Like I said, Pro Football Talk has covered it. They said there's a scenario where each person who had Sunday ticket between a period of years where we had it would get $3,000 to $4,000.
Okay.
Get me my check. I have to say. Yeah. A little recommendation for everyone. I have my summer book for when I'm at the beach or the pool. Michael Richards from Seinfeld. The name of the book is Entrances and Exits.
Love it.
If you are a Seinfeld fan, must read. Now, let me set it up. The book is, I'm going to give or take here. The book's like 400 pages.
Ooh.
The first 200 are about his start in show business, his, life getting it. Now, there's some good stuff in there because he was on the show. You might not be, I don't know if you might not be, there's a show called Fridays, which in the 70s, there was Saturday Night Live on NBC. ABC decided to copy Saturday Night Live and do that type of show on ABC on Friday nights, and it's called Fridays, and on that show was Michael Richards and Larry David. And there's a famous clip of Andy Kaufman, who was on that show, sort of sabotaging the show, and there's a whole fight, and supposedly it was live TV, and who was in on it, who was, so it's, if you YouTube Fridays, Andy Kaufman, you can watch that. But anyway, the first 200 is on all that. The last 200 pages of the book is on Seinfeld and his, you know, when he made the racist comments in the comedy club and got shuttered from show business, basically. And I went into it like, okay, I'm a big Seinfeld fan. I don't want to sound like an arrogant prick, but like, is there stuff I really don't know that at this point? You know, you've heard so many stories. There's stuff in there I didn't know. You know, I knew there was a famous story that I knew about early on in Seinfeld. There was an episode where Jason Alexander wasn't in the episode and he threatened to quit. The same thing happened with Michael Richards, which I didn't know. There was an episode where he wasn't in it and he was very angry about it. I don't want to give spoilers, but if you are a Seinfeld, a big Seinfeld fan, you have to read that book.
Okay.
So
you got me into it. As a matter of fact, I've been watching a lot more Seinfeld recently because with YouTube TV, like you just put in some of your likes and then it automatically has all these programs in there. So yesterday I was watching like three or four during the Veterans Day. I watched like four episodes and it's been years since I've seen some of them. So I'm kind of in a Seinfeld mode right now. I am intrigued by that. Do they have the Audible version? Do you know?
I don't know.
You're not an Audible guy?
No, because I like to read at the beach and the pool in the summer. Because I can't see my phone, so I need a book.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Also, it's 2024. How does Apple not invent a phone where you could see it in the sun?
Good point. I thought it was just my eyesight. I can't see anything out there.
I got to deal with all this AI, GPT, blah, blah, blah. Can I get a phone that I can see when I'm laying like a bum at the beach? I've got to take the phone. I got to take my glasses off, put the phone in a towel, put my head under the towel, and then I can see. And it's 100 degrees. I'm sweating like a fat pig as it is. And yeah. I can't see the goddamn phone. It's ridiculous. How do we not have a phone that we can see in the sun? But yeah, so I can't recommend that book enough. So speaking of the summer, you know, we've had this conversation about Grimace the past 2 weeks where I've said, you know, fun is not our thing. And I can't think of a more appropriate day for that mantra than 4th of July. I don't want to say it's number one, but if you give me the top five things I hate the most in this world, fireworks is in the top five. Fireworks, raisins, people. Like, that would be the top three. So,
reasons.
Now, you have a dog. Does your dog go ballistic with the fireworks?
He does not, but I'll tell you this. I don't mind. Now, I've never shot off a firework or anything like that. I don't mind them on 4th of July.
I agree.
We were getting them last week and this weekend. Loud and nonstop, and even my wife was like, "What the hell is going on here?"
Yeah.
It's not Fourth of July week. Like, do it on 4th of July.
Right. I couldn't exactly. Like, listen, I would love to, but I can't complain about fireworks being shut off on the 4th of July. If I do that, I'm just a big bitch. You can't do it.
Right.
Fine. You want to shoot them off on the 4th of July? I do think there should be a time limit. I don't need them at midnight when I'm, you know. But whatever. You want to shoot them off on the 4th of July? I can't say a word on the 4th of July. I have to keep my big mouth shut. I don't need Saturday night, they're blasting off Sunday night. It's just noise. It's just goddamn noise.
Yeah, I don't get the appeal of why they would do it weekends before. You have plenty of time to do it.
And I got something else I despise about the 4th of July. Again, we don't do fun. I don't think there's anything dumber in the universe than that hot dog eating contest.
Oh, okay.
It's dumb. It's repulsive. There's people who don't even have food and we're shoving hot dogs down. I don't get the appeal of it. I don't understand. Here's what I really don't understand. I really don't understand being in your house on the 4th of July, putting your television on, or I guess, you know, if you're not old, you put your iPad on. You put on ESPN and you watch these people stuff hot dogs in them. I don't understand the appeal in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched it over the years in, sporadically in spurts. I'm not, it probably won't even register this year. Like, I got bigger
And then the
issues going
guy
on.
wins, and people talk about him like he's like
Isn't
LeBron James or Tom Brady.
isn't he not doing it? Isn't there something where Chestnut is not, Joey Chestnut's not doing it?
I don't know. I don't pay
Yeah,
attention.
I think he bowed out this year. He has some different endorsement or something where he's not doing it. So
Oh,
I
good.
don't know.
Then maybe people won't talk about
Oh,
it.
he was banned. There you go, Shelby.
Oh, he was banned from the hot dog eating contest?
I think because he has another sponsorship or something.
What a, first of all, just how about that sentence alone? Him and Kobayashi are doing it on Netflix. Oh, that's okay. They're doing it on Netflix. There you go.
It's so big, it's turning into a Netflix special. Are you a big hot dog guy?
No, because I had a bad experience.
Oh.
Yeah. I remember my parents had a barbecue. I think I ate like three hot dogs, threw them up that night, and haven't been able to eat one since.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's a problem.
I like hot dogs, but not as much as I used to. As a kid, we used to have them all the freaking time.
If I'm at a barbecue, the number one for me, I think this might be the Italian roots. I want some sausage.
Sausage
And
and peppers? And
I like the thin, the ring,
yeah.
with nice Italian semolina bread.
We used to
That's what I
have it
like.
on New Year's. Every New Year's Eve, it was a big thing. Sausage at midnight and all that, and whatever
See,
it
I like it
was.
on the bar. I like the sausage on the barbecue.
Okay.
That's what I like.
Now you're
Yeah.
getting me hungry. I'm gonna have to get some sausage this week. I love that.
So you won't be shooting off fireworks on the 4th of July. Do you have 4th of July
No.
plans?
No, we didn't. I have my family coming over the 5th, and we might just have my wife's a brother and his kids come over July 4th. I gotta actually work that out after we're done here, but no plans, staying home.
Now, this is your first 4th of July in the new house, so you don't know what goes on with the fireworks on your block and all that.
Right, but it's been a right. I'm hoping we could see some from the backyard, maybe. But it's been a the sounds that have, the fireworks been going off. It's insane what's gone on the last this past
Now,
weekend. So,
so you're hoping you can see some. Why?
yeah, I mean, my wife is into it. Maybe my daughter. I'd like to see it
Right.
from the backyard.
I'll give you a spoiler. It's just like colors in the sky.
You really are no fun. I mean, my hate for Grimace is a little bit different than your hate for fireworks. Yeah, fireworks are nice.
Oh, your hate for Grimace is so much worse. My hate,
How?
because he, my hate is because the noise intrudes on me. I don't want to hear loud noises. If it was
Right.
just the colors with no noises, fine. I don't want to hear the noise.
But you don't like looking at the fireworks
Grimace
on
is
for.
doing no damage to you personally.
Well, we
No, I
made
don't.
up. Now, what about you making up with fireworks? Like, you won't, if you have a
Never.
barbecue, you're doing, you going somewhere? What are
Never.
you doing 4th of July?
Usually I meet friends, we go, I take my nieces, we go to this beach. They do
Okay.
fireworks there. But the fireworks
Oh.
there, I don't go for the, if it was up to me, I'd leave before the fireworks.
All right.
I go because my niece, but the fireworks at the beach are not bad because they're very, very, very far away, so they're not loud.
Right, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I want to see them from a distance. Yeah, I'd like to
I
be
don't
able to
want to
go in
see
my
them at all.
backyard.
When they're shooting off the fireworks, I don't even look up to the sky. I'm talking to people. I have no interest. I could, okay, I got it. Green and red and yellow. Okay,
Yeah.
wonderful.
Right.
Yeah, not my thing. And Grimace isn't doing anything to you personally. The
Right.
fireworks affect me because they're loud.
Right.
I
I
don't
get
want
it.
noise. All right. I'm glad you got it. Happy 4th of July, Sal. Enjoy the day. We'll see you next week.
You too. I'll talk to you
All right.
later.
Bye. All right, my many, many thanks to Jason McCourty. My thanks to Sal Licata. My thanks to you for listening. If you missed any recent episodes of the podcast, make sure you check it out. Recent guests. Last week, Pablo Torre from Meadowlark Media and ESPN was on the show. 2 weeks ago, Derek Jeter and Richard Deitch of The Athletic. 3 weeks ago, Tom Brady and author and reporter Jim Miller. So if you missed any of those, give them a listen. Subscribe to SI Media with Jimmy Traina. Rate and review on Apple. All right, have a happy and safe 4th of July. We'll see you next week. Stay safe and take care.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.